Hello again, everybody, and welcome to another episode of BitNote. We'll be playing some great video game music and talking about the games they're from. I've got a very interesting selection for you this show, so I hope you enjoy. So, over the week, I was looking up some webcomics, and I think I've told you about webcomics before. They are comics on the internet, but more usefully, they serve as a good form of cultural expression, often for people who wouldn't be expressed in other media, since it takes very easy to make a comic. Well, it's not easy to make a comic, but the point is you hear a lot of voices and opinions and thoughts in webcomics that you mightn't hear in, like, TV programs or mainstream music or a lot of other mainstream stuff, which is why they're a lot of fun, a lot of good, and you get a lot of interesting perspectives on them. So anyway, I came across one webcomic that actually ended up having a guy ask, it was a standard-like situation, a guy was asked, you know, what musicians does he listen to? And through his head, all he can think of is video game music. I linked the comic on my Twitter feed, if anyone was interested. It's at BitNodeFM, you know, Twitter. And through his mind goes a whole load of video game music. He's too embarrassed to mention any of them, so he just says Kanye West, which turns out to be the wrong answer in any event. Just demonstrating once again the importance of standing up for yourself and promoting your own sense of individuality and not just conforming to mainstream culture, but also maybe just having a laugh at the expense of a guy who just tries to fit in and completely fails at it. When we see his little thought bubble of all the games he's going through, he mentions about all this great game tune, and it's a very good selection, actually, I must admit. And he mentions about how, like, how he mentions Sonic Adventure music, yay! And also how pretty much every bit of Sonic music is good, except that BioWare one. Well, I agreed that that was a very top-on statement. Sonic has always, even through his worst times like Sonic 2006, which nearly every fan doesn't like, has always maintained a really good standard of music. Partially it seems to be at Sega, and Sega really seemed to take their music seriously over there, or at least fun, or at least just have good people at music over there. So it's true that no matter how bad the games get, the music seems to stay good. However, there are always exceptions. And I mean, I'm sure that maybe if you dig in, you can probably find one or two more exceptions. But one of them that stands out is, of course, the BioWare Sonic game called Sonic Chronicles the Dark Brotherhood. So, why is this entry infamous in terms of music? Well, normally I try to play good music, but in order to actually demonstrate this point, I'm going to play some music from the game. Now, bear in mind, I'm not trying to defend this, I just think it's a good example. So, what we have here is music from the place Metropolis. Have a listen, and remember, I've deliberately chosen a shortish song. This is under 3 minutes, so once it's over, I'll try to talk and maybe we can get to some better music afterwards. We'll be right back. And that was Metropolis, and it was from Sonic Chronicles The Dark Brotherhood, which was developed by BioWare. And as for who actually composed that song, I'm going to actually go into a bit later, because I just think that I've got to at least try to give these guys a fair hearing. Actually, to be honest, I don't think the music is too bad. I mean, I understand why pretty much everyone had issue with it. It's just, well, I've told you before about MIDIs and synthesized sounds and stuff, and that's just... Well, you have ears, so I think you can form your own opinion. So what exactly happened? Actually, what exactly is Sonic Chronicles Dark Brotherhood, and why are BioWare developing it? If you don't know BioWare, they're obviously A, not Sega, who do a lot of the Sonic game development, and B, actually develop role-playing games like Baldur's Gate, Neverwinter Nights, Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic, Mass Effect, and Dragon Age. So they're more stories where a guy goes around, talks to people, then goes on a bit of action, defeats, storylines, branching stuff. So what exactly happened? Well, essentially, Sega, and it's not unusual, let BioWare develop a Sonic the Hedgehog role-playing game. Now, this seems a little caught up in the first place, because Sonic is about running fast, but role-playing games are about, you know, walking around. It tends to be a lot slower. I'm not going to go into whole detail about it, but the whole point is, I do understand that reason. The fact is, I think that Sonic is a good character. He's got a decent selection of characters. The world seems relatively vibrant. So making a game that focuses more on the story and character aspects of it doesn't sound like a terrible idea to me. And a lot of people just couldn't get over that. A lot of people couldn't get over the fact that he suddenly had turn-based battles and stuff, but I liked it a lot. But what happened with the music? Well, to be honest, I don't actually know. The thing is that the people who are ascribed to the music are Stephen Sims and Richard Jacks. Now, Stephen Sims has done a lot of music on a lot of BioWare games, you know, like Mass Effect and the others. And Richard Jacks, I mean, he couldn't be, like, responsible. I played music from him multiple times on the show. I started with his Headhunter theme, which was class, and have done a lot of other great stuff. I mean, everyone talks about the Sonic War soundtrack, but I think that was because it was more like a looping song with lyrics in it that would kind of do your head in if you listen to it long enough. It's not that the song was actually bad, just maybe not placed in the best position, and maybe just a matter of taste. But a lot of the Sonic Chronicles soundtrack didn't just sound bad, it sounded lazy, so to speak. A lot of times there were remixes of classic tracks, which sounds good, except they didn't seem to be so much remixes. They seemed to be tracks taken from old Sonic games, basic MIDI things that are just taken down to their basics and played without any changes. There was a lot of weird rumors I heard. I heard that they had a whole like soundtrack and then they had to tear it apart and just throw in some soundtrack within 2 weeks at no notice. I heard some things about what they did was they went in sites and took MIDI tunes and did a lot of things. There was a lot of stuff about Sonic Chronicles, and I think in some respects it was a little rushed and unfinished. Now we know that Sonic is about rushing and going fast, and indeed one of his Sonic games are actually called Sonic Rush. But bad things happen when the actual developers behind the Sonic games tend to rush things, and indeed the aforementioned Sonic 2006 being one example. And I think that Sonic Chronicles just did have a lot of rough edges to it, especially when it comes to the soundtrack area. But however, I don't like taking the whole like things. There were a lot of good stuff towards Sonic Chronicles 2. And I'm going to continue on talking about the things when I actually play, I think, one of the better tracks of the game, because not all of it was bad. I'm going to play Battle 4 now. Like I said, I don't know who exactly did it, Stephen Sims, Richard Jacks, or who, but let's just have a listen. After this, I'll talk a bit more about where I thought the game went right. We'll be right back. And that was Battle 4 from Sonic Chronicles, The Dark Brotherhood. So, how exactly does this game come across? Well, it's a role-playing game, so you control characters, they walk around, you talk to people, you occasionally get quests, you go to an area, you have to fight monsters in turn-based combat, you come back, and you hopefully get a reward, move on, and gradually either do side quests or just follow the main threat to involving going on a gradually increasing plot line as you learn a great big story that usually involves you having to save the world. If that description sounds like absolutely every role-playing game ever, then you're pretty much right, because that kind of is. The difference is, this is with Sonic the Hedgehog and friends, and boy, are they friends. You see, this game actually goes through quite a bit of effort to make sure that you're fully embraced with all your friends. It's not just Sonic and his bus buddy Tails, and even Tails sometimes get the shafts of time, but it's Tails, it's Amy, it's Knuckles, it's even Shadow, and it's Shadow, Rouge the Bat, even in a Omega sort of copy, and a bunch of other characters, and even a couple of new ones. Basically, you start off in Green Hill, though the soundtrack is not Green Hill soundtrack. I don't want to play that now, I was considering it, but it's 5 minutes long, and I figure that 3 minutes of Metropolis was enough for you listening audience. You're very, very welcome. Yeah, you basically go around, and it turns out there's this other sort of dark force that's threatening it, and for once Robotnik isn't behind it, so there's this nice bit where you team up with him. Then later on, you end up going into outer space, which was interesting, but didn't quite seem like the sort of thing for Sonic. I've always thought that, like, since Sonic is already on an alien planet relative to us, introducing other alien planets seems a little redundant, but, ah well, everyone has their own style. There's pretty nice graphics. Some of the art is good. Other, like the animated cutscenes, aren't as well. And there's just a lot of personality as you go through the story. One of my favorite bits about the game is the dialogue. And they've got Sonic snark right down. I mean, they took a lot of inspiration from a lot of shorts. They took a lot of it from the Archie Sonic comics. I think they read the UK Sonic comics as well. Apparently they watched a bit of media. Even they tried to tie in continuity with some of the previous games, like Sonic Battle. I mean, this might sound weird, but whenever even Sega released an official Sega game, it's a wild shot whether this game will actually acknowledge that anything that happened in previous games actually happened. And so to actually play it where they actually try to, like, look at the plot of Sonic Battle and tie it into the main storyline of Sonic Chronicles is actually an achievement in and of itself, that they're trying to actually get some sort of continuity for Sonic the Hedgehog's universe, something that's sorely deficient in all other headings. But the dialogue is a lot of fun. They completely got Sonic snark right down. So if someone tells you something, you know, you can have Sonic the Hedgehog, you can choose your dialogue reply, and sometimes you might just say, thanks for the help, or sometimes you might make a sarcastic comment. Now, I kind of grew up reading a lot of the UK British Sonic comics, and Sonic was always a bit snarky in them. So for instance, when Amy asked you need to go over there to destroy the robots, but you'll need to be fast in order to get the timer down. Do you think you can do that? One of the options that I got was, hello, I'm Sonic the Hedgehog. Have we met? And yes, that was a completely jerkish thing to say to basically someone who was only trying to help. But I pressed it, and I was very, very happy with the result. Actually, Amy is another aspect they did well, because she was introduced in Sonic CD as basically, and of course there wasn't much storytelling, but you could tell that she was desperately in love with Sonic. So depending on which storyline or which continuity of Sonic you're looking at, either she has feelings for Sonic and Sonic kind of replicates at least too cool to kind of acknowledge it, or Sonic is genuinely too cool to have a girlfriend and Amy is just this annoying person who keeps at it. And the great thing about Sonic Chronicles is when you play it, you can decide which version of Sonic you could be. She starts by saying that she has a boyfriend, and if you actually treat her nice, she'll actually admit that it was a fabrication and there'll be a bit of a moment of connection between you. Alternatively, if you play it as I did, where responding to her with snarky comments to try to put her down in all circumstances, which was kind of rude, but then again, that's kind of the dynamic I imagined it, then basically she won't tell you won't actually learn anything, and you'll wonder why she never mentioned anything about this Dexter person ever time so after. The character thing affects other aspects, such as the battle system, and this is another one of my favourite bits. You see, you can select your teams. There are a few things in the game that let you shake it up a little, but basically I think there's always going to be Sonic, and you select the other three characters to make a four-person team. And sometimes you'll have what's called a team attack, where basically you and a couple of other characters combine to make a cool attack. And one of the great things I like is that the selection of which set of characters can do a team attack is not random. It really just shows the connection. For instance, Sonic, of course, can do a powerful attack, so can Tails. Sonic and Tails, the original duo, of course, when they're powered up, they can do an attack because they're best friends. Sonic and Tails, a and Knuckles, well, of course, they were from the original set of Sega Mega Drive games. So, of course, they're powered up for an attack. Then Amy, and you're looking at all the major characters before 1996. So, of course, they can do a team attack. If you decide, I'm going to make a team completely comprised of characters that happened before Sonic went 3D, you will be rewarded for doing so in its own way. At the same time, maybe if you decide to go, I remember Sonic Adventure 2 and how there were three main bad guys, I'm going to make sure those three bad guys are in the team. Yep, if you put them all up together, they can do a team attack. And if you're going, I think the Tails and Robotnik are really interesting because they're both like inventors that love creating a stuff. So you have Tails and Robotnik on your team because you think they have a lot in common. Yep, the developers have ensured that they have a team attack. So it's such a brilliant way of getting the characters across. The fact that there's a limited selection of team attacks, but it actually makes sense with the characters. If two characters kind of like work with each other in terms of personality or character or just narrative or even history, then the chances are there's a team attack because the developers understood this connection between the characters. And it's a way of actually bringing their personality into the actual battlefield. And so the idea of these team attacks is just great for actually expressing personalities in the actual gameplay. I think I've almost gone on. There's a bunch of other little things I could talk about it, such as they decided to do the credits in the form of text dialogues, which is weird. How the game ended on a cliffhanger, how there were little problems here and there. But I think I've spent enough time to move on to our next game, interestingly enough. What am I about to play now? One of the composer of this tune actually contacted me and introduced me to the track. I listened to the music, really liked it, and then I ended up playing the game it's from just to... And I kind of liked it too. So I'll dive into that right now. Have a listen. And what you just heard there was Footprint. It is from the game Pop by No. It's basically spelt N-N-O-O-O. And the music was composed by Andrew Kernock, a.k.a. Beat Therapy, and it is from his album Remote Control. So, as you can see, I've looked through the album, and it's a nice selection. There's kind of like a bit of electronic, synth, pop, chill out, trancey sort of mixture. It's all relaxing and kind of chill out and weird. And it basically, the most of the music is meant to act as a background as you do the in the game pop bubbles. Yes, you're popping bubbles. It's pop. Now, it's for the DSi and the iPhone, but I played it for the Wii. It's basically WiiWare, which is kind of like Nintendo's solution of, you know, we've basically got games that you download from the internet onto your Nintendo console, and it's like pretty much like PCs have had for a while, and then Xbox it with arcade, and now it's an old hat by this stage. But the fact is, I played Pop, and it's a very nice family game. A large amount of bubbles go on the screen, and you have to quickly pop them. Different sizes mean that either you'll get a higher score, or else you'll get more time, and you have to keep popping bubbles until the time runs out, popping enough so you get more time. It's a family game, so everyone like grabs it like a Wii remote control, and they aim it at the screen and try to get the cursor on the bubbles and shoot them all. And if you basically shoot enough bubbles of the same color in the right sequence, you get this whole multiplier thing. So you can think of, do you want to just shoot frantically to get enough points or time, or do you want to just try to be a bit more strategic and get more points? And then meanwhile, you got also a bunch of other sort of bubbles, like nuclear devices that take out a lot of bubbles, or things that damage you and stuff. So you got to be a little careful and intelligent about which bubbles you're shooting for, and can't just go by blind luck. So meanwhile, it's a set of relatively simple rules on a relatively engaging premise. And soon enough, you're standing there, you're aiming at the control at the screen, you're shooting all the bubbles, and like I said, you can have others to join in. And all this time, you've got this really nice kind of interesting music playing in the background, and which I'll play you another tune of right now. As I said, this was Andrew Kernock's AKA Beat Therapy's music. He's composed music for another game called Escape Vector, which is on the 3DS download, and that was also developed by Nuu, which is, by the way, an Australian indie games developer. Andrew's also developed music for Game Boy Advance games. I'll leave you now with Free Flowing. I think it's a great track on the album, and I'll leave it at that. So, this is David Collins with BitNote. Thank you for listening.